psychotherapy. I get to understand why I do what I do, but at least sometimes I still do it. So the intellectual comprehension of our emotions and their stories seem to need a somatic counterpart for health, right? Here's the third episode of my somatic philosophy series. This time you're invited to listen in on a conversation with Heather Levenstein, freelancing violist and mind recovery systems therapist based in Göteborg, Sweden. And my name is Miriam van der Valk. Even talking about somatic philosophy, I don't think has been done before. And I don't even know if it's possible to talk about it, because how can you talk about when your consciousness sort of sips through the cells in into your body? So how do you even say it other than, I mean, how can you explain the, like, why it's good, or, you know, like, what does integrity mean, even to have mind and body as one? So these super meta reflections is what I have in the back of my mind, and then I'm turning on this microphone and I'll just see where the conversation goes. And so basically I'm just thinking, we don't have to say anything clever, we'll just do whatever, and then, like, in a year from now we'll see what it was that happened today. You know.
And it's amazing for body awareness and for relearning a lot of bad habits. But and just tell me if I'm too much off the topic.
There is no such thing as off the topic.
So and he said to her, you know, when you're sitting down, you're pulling your neck back. And she said, no, I wasn't. And David, I mean, David's a stubborn, very stubborn. I have fought with David. And so, you know, it's hard to win an argument with David. So I'm quite impressed that in that situation, he actually gave up as trying to win it. And she said, no, I'm not. And he said, yes, you are. She said, no, I'm not. And he said, well, I can fetch a mirror and show you. And then she said, yes, I'm quite sure you could fetch the mirror and show me and be right. But I am not pulling my neck back when I'm sitting down. And he said, and then it clicked for him. All right, so I could get the mirror and I could win this argument. Or I could actually listen to her and try and find out what she is doing.
And here we have the other super interesting thing that comes up all the time. Subjectivity and radical subjectivity.
And not just subjectivity, but what is really going on that is creating that body movement. Because Alexander Technique, you're relearning. All right, so I'm relearning that I mustn't do this when I play. Because but what I realized with learning methods was, why did I do this? Because I thought, well, that's being a very good girl. I'm sitting up straight. I'm not one of these people who, you know, you don't enjoy looking at them when they sit in an orchestra because they're slouching. I'm doing this. So I was doing this, and it meant that I was pulling back my thing, and I was having, my back was closing, and I was having problems with my bow arm. But an Alexander Technique is amazing with teaching me a different way. But learning methods really helped me find out why I was doing it. And getting to the belief system in what you have to do to make things work.
And these were they come from your, let's say, psychological history or something. Things you have understood about what it means to be you, a good version of you.
And it all comes with, I suppose, you know, from the inside, and, you know, for approval, or why am I doing this? Why is it so important then to sit up straight? And and I mean, I'm sure all learning methods teachers work so differently, but Pia, it's very interesting, actually. You would love interviewing her, because she's a learning methods teacher. She's also just got a doctorate, actually, in adult development. But
Development. I love those two words together.
And also and in processes. I think it's processes. You would have loved being at her dissertation. It was all about processes. And when her opponent said, just misunderstood everything and said to her, you know, it was going on about the different stages. And Pia was quiet for a minute and then said to her, no, but that isn't what I've written. And it was, you could have cut the tension. She said, I realized very early on, I'm not very interested in stages. I'm interested in the minute-to-minute process.
Yes.
and what's happening now in this moment. And that's where she teaches. She's also a black belt in Aikido, and she's also a Qigong teacher, and she's also a trained acupressurist. So she's got that whole thing with movement as well in her knowledge and her understanding and the way she teaches. So
these are other like movements, process, emerging, the emergent, this, I love the sentence, to get out of the striving energy and into the emergent energy. Right. This is, you can just see how it's sort of,
exactly,
you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the stages, it's so 20th century, isn't it? I had this period when I always read a lot, but I had this period when I wanted to read up on sort of coaching and coaching methods, and because I'm a philosophical coach as well. And I looked through, most of them had like, you know, this five letter combination of theme, 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 and they stand for different things, and you should do them in this order, and then you answer, blah, 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 blah. And it's like, I just sort of looked at these pages, and then I sort of closed the book and gave it back to the library. It's just so 20th century to go by this list of things. It's not how the psyche works, and it's not how the, I mean, of course you can isolate parts and say, well, let's work on blah, blah, just like you do with the body. You isolate, you say, well, here is where the knot is. That's where we need to push right now. Yeah. But it's not like isn't always connected to your fingertips or your feet or your brain or your and this is what's so interesting with this is sort of kind of what made me interested in trying to see if there's something like somatic philosophy, you know, philosophy being wisdom seeking activity, like looking for and wisdom being, you know, always you always have to go define everything.
But the body's wisdom.
Yeah, the body's wisdom.
Is what I'm hearing when you say that. Because that is also, that's one of the things when I was reading through my notes from my training for mind recovery, that, you know, that if you go to a doctor, and I was thinking when you said that about the knot, because also, well, why is the knot there?
Yes, of course.
You know, because they will see it as a fault. There was that something has to be put right.
Yeah.
Whereas the way we work, we see it as, well, the body is very wise.
Yes.
It's put it there for a reason.
Yes, it's and telling
you
something.
You use that as your aha, it's telling you something. So this is our... This is our knowledge. This is what we have to work with.
Yes.
And the body's put it there for a reason, so let's find out why.
Yes. And what the mind can do is interpretation. Mm-hmm. This is like the tool of the mind, you know?
Yes.
So that's how we need both of these things. But we can't just say, all I do, like so many philosophers throughout time, you know, the brain in the vat. Mm. I'm going to think the world and I can understand everything from my armchair. Mm. You know, I never have to be anywhere. I never have to... I can understand the color red without seeing it, you know. It can't be. It's just that's how what I'm thinking. So but the
yeah, for me there has to be a connection.
Yeah,
and that is what I was looking for.
Yeah,
because I with my own understanding of myself, you know, I've always been, you know, you spoke about striving and emergence. I mean, I love the way you differentiated there, but. Or you could just say growth, development. Yeah. You know, that's always been, there's always been that drive in me.
Yeah.
And I come from this family where therapy is really kind of the holy cow, you know. Yeah. Like, my father was a doctor, but he was also a psychotherapist. And so I've done my fair share of therapy. And it was very helpful.
Yeah.
It was very good. Mm. And I wouldn't want to be without what I've done there. But it was this feeling always of, yeah, okay, but I understand now why I react that way.
Mm.
But I still do.
Yes. I know.
And it's almost worse thing to understand.
Yes.
Because then there's this frustration of, well, then why isn't it changing? Why does my body still go in those situations? And then I've also been always so interested in the body and what the body stores.
Mm.
So I've always felt it. It's you know, it's in the body. It's not just that I can sit and talk about it. And I've wanted to work with people in this kind of way as well. And I did basic training in acupressure and in kinesiology and in Reiki. And none of it just quite grabbed me in the way that I want to work with this. Because then it was too much just working with the body. Even if, of course, you're affecting everything. Of course you are. But there wasn't... I'm very interested in the intellectual side of, yes. as well, of the yeah. understanding yeah. and the
magic in words.
Yes, and, yes.
You know?
And connecting the dots.
Yes.
Ah, that's why.
Yeah.
But that wasn't enough. And so it wasn't until I discovered this method that I felt that I'd found something that connected the two.
Mm.
And also, like with Alexander technique, I think it's amazing, and it helps me, and I still go.
Mm.
But that on its own, of just working with the way you use your body, but not, well, why
mm.
am I continuing to mm. use it this way?
Mm.
So then, I mean, if you're doing all these different things, you can put it together yourself, of
yeah.
course.
Mm.
For me, the most powerful, and I'm not in any way negating the other stuff, because I wouldn't want to be without any of it
mm.
that I've done, and it's all been part of my growth process. But mm. this for me has been by far the most powerful, because
mm.
it's got the intellectual understanding, but at the same time, you are bypassing the intellect when you are being treated.
Yeah. Yes, but I mean,
so,
yeah.
Do you understand what I'm saying? Like, because when the therapist starts tapping, my experience now as a client, not as a practitioner.
Yeah.
So I'm speaking mm-hmm. now of my own experience when I go for treatments myself, is that I've sat in therapy and not been able to talk about stuff that I've known I've needed to talk about.
Mm.
It's just been, no, I just can't do it. I just can't go there. And yeah. I've been able to make that. Well, either being able to make that intellectual decision not to, or not being able to make the decision to. I don't mm. know, whichever way you see it.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Yeah. But when he has started tapping, when my body was ready, it just presented the stuff.
Mm.
And I was like, oh, shit, am I really saying this?
Yeah. Oh, so there's tapping and then talk, and then you talk.
You talk at the same time.
Oh, interesting.
Mm. Mm.
Wow. Mm. Yeah, so the words that come out, do they feel authentic and accurate?
Because 100%.
Yeah, because that's what I also felt when I was at my worst, shortly after my dad died.
Mm.
I was in therapy in Holland, and I sat like with my hand above my eyes, and I'm like, you know, like a truly very disturbed person, and I felt really disturbed too. Mm. And it also felt like I couldn't reach what was really the problem,
mm.
you know,
mm.
because what I was saying it was okay, but she didn't really get it. And,
yeah.
you know, and I didn't really, the way a sentence can change you, like
yes.
saying one sentence can just, like, it opens so much that, you know, the words mm. are magical keys
yeah.
to
yeah.
castles and cities,
yeah.
you know. Yeah.
yeah.
So it's So it's tapping and talking. It sounds like it sounds like what I would have needed maybe. But I'm also, like you say, I'm happy about my own growth process. And if I would have been
yeah.
given this earlier, I would have, the rest would have been much different.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, so
And very often, it isn't the right time in people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've treated people. Especially think of two in the last year. I've thought, oh, come on,
yeah.
come back. We only just started getting started here.
Mm-hmm.
And both Christa and Thomas, both my teachers,
mm-hmm.
I spoke to them about it. And they said, this is going to happen so many times.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to let go of it. Concentrate on the people who are ready.
Yeah.
That Christa said, sometimes they phone you 5 years later.
Yeah.
And they say, now I'm ready.
Yeah.
And you've got to respect that.
Yeah.
That that's someone else's process, someone
yeah.
else knowing, I'm not ready for this right now.
Mm.
This, it is very powerful.
Mm. That's also trusting the process.
Yes.
You know, to allow people to, you know, they have the what's it called? Gummi band.
The elastic cord.
The elastic cord, and they're like, I need to go here right now.
Yes.
And
yes.
then I'll come back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. And having the humility.
Yeah.
Then, you know, as a therapist, I mean, I'm not a psychotherapist, but therapist as in mind recovery therapist.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
very important to make the distinction. But to trust someone else's process
mm.
and not think that I necessarily have that answer for them,
yeah.
that this is what they, you know, they'll know when they're ready to do this, because it's hard work.
Yeah.
It's not very nice. It's not like going for a lovely massage.
No.
It's the best thing I've ever done and the hardest thing I've ever done.
Yeah.
And my daughter, you know, my daughter, who has ADHD and was in a very bad place, you know, she describes it, because we drive 4 hours to get her a treatment and drive 4 hours back or take the train.
Mm.
And she says, yeah, the way there is kind of, the way there is never very nice.
Yeah.
And then it's one very uncomfortable hour. Yeah. And then the way back, we always eat really good food and we feel great. And we get on really, really well. But and it's very interesting to hear her describe it to her friend. I was actually listening in on a conversation, and it was, you know, this very rebellious teenager, you know, who doesn't like to admit to her parents that they're right about a lot of stuff, except for certain moments, you know, she but mommy has a lot of traumas. And I told him, you must go to my mother. She'll treat you for free. I was like, oh, wait, just stop. And he said, but I'm going to therapy. And she said, but are you feeling better?
Yeah.
And he said, no, I'm not. Yeah. She said, well, there you have it.
Yeah.
You need this. And it's like, and it was quite amazing. Yeah, okay. Mm. You know, and she was, you know, they said she's got to take medication. They were freaking out at us first that we were against medication. This is the only thing they have to offer.
Yeah. I know.
This
it's
is
crazy.
The only thing. Yeah. And we fought for more and we got more, but it didn't help. And they said, oh, she's probably the most complicated case we've met in 30 years. And now we go for follow-ups, and they don't understand anything.
Yeah.
They don't understand why this kid is in a... Basically, she's still a 16-year-old, rebellious pain in the neck a lot of the time, but in a very normal way.
Yeah.
You know, she's amazing as well. Let me just say, she is so smart and so creative and so insightful, but she hides it a lot of the time.
Well, who wouldn't if you're 16?
Exactly. Mm. But what I find very scary is how the top psychiatrist there, he was, you know, the first time we went back and he was like, oh, and sleeping? And she says, no, I can fall asleep now. I don't need any of that stuff to fall asleep.
Mm.
And he was like, okay. And and school, well, I go to school. I'm late sometimes, but I go to school. She said, look, I feel basically now like I did when I was on that medication, but without the side effects.
Mm.
And he went, oh. And I said, you know, there's a lecture in Gothenburg about this in a couple of weeks if you're interested.
Oh, I don't have time.
You saw, like, he started, like, looking out the window, and yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas another woman there who works at the institute, but more than not from the psychiatry point of view, she was interested. She wanted to know all about it. But most of them, where do I put this in my frame of reference?
Mm.
I can't find a place. Okay. You know, doesn't exist.
Mm.
This was a coincidence. And I find that so sad.
Mm.
I find it criminal almost.
Mm.
Because if it was a medication that they'd found that helped kids like this, kids who were, like they were saying, well, maybe she shouldn't carry on living at home because... she's in such a destructive crowd and in such a destructive circle right now that what's going to happen?
Mm.
And then she comes back a few months later and everything's changed.
Mm.
If that had been a medication, they wouldn't be ignoring it.
Mm-hmm.
But now we've done it without medication. And you go, oh.
It's also very short-sighted from, like, even from a very egotistical professional point of view, you know, we have never seen... any age in science that hasn't been overturned by the next one.
Exactly.
Yeah, so you need to be always have this in mind, you know. Do you want to be the one who was against?
Exactly.
You know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Even if you don't believe in anything for your own sake, you know, for your own reputation's sake, you could be the one who, you know.
Have you heard of Dr. Lisa Rankin?
No.
Oh, you would enjoy reading stuff. There's a book, Mind Over Medicine.
Mind of a medicine. I'll take a note.
You can borrow mine if you want.
Oh, excellent. Perfect.
And she's a doctor who just left the system because she just felt there was no space for her, for growth in it. And one of the things she wrote in the book was, you know, cases of spontaneous healing, like a woman who had a cancerous tumor.
Mm.
And received radiation and the tumor shrunk and disappeared.
Mm.
And afterwards they realized the radiation machine was broken.
Yeah. Yeah, this is my favorite kind of story.
Yeah. And she said, yeah. But it's only whispered about in the corridors because they have invested so much time and money in their education and they really have something to give. Again, I am not saying there's no place for Western medicine, but you would think that they would be, so what was it that happened?
You'd think that they'd put all their resources in trying to see what happened.
Yeah.
And if they can reproduce it.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
And here we go again with the mind-body connection and things like intention.
Mm. Intention. So why do you put intention in there? That wouldn't have been the word that came up for me.
What?
Intention wouldn't have been the word that came to mind for
intention, me. Healing intention.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm.
So she goes into this broken machine.
Mm.
And she thinks, I'm getting better now.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm. And the machine's broken and she gets better.
Right. Okay, that's what you mean by that. Then I understand.
Yeah. Intent. What's the better word?
No, intention is the right word for what you're describing. I just would... Intent for me is such a... It only describes such a... how do I put this? How do I verbalize this? I understand this in my head.
Yeah.
I don't think that intent was such a big part of it in the way I understand it.
No?
I think that it was a belief that I can get better.
Mm.
Of course, there has to be an intention in wanting to get better.
Mm.
But if she speaks so much about the power of the doctor, you were talking about the power of words when you introduced like one of your podcasts, the power of the doctor in the way they give a prognosis to a patient.
Yes. Yeah.
And, you know, if they come and say, look, I'm really sorry, this is very bad news, but only like 1% of people get better from this. Or there's such a different way of saying that. You could come and say, look, there's good news and there's bad news. We couldn't get it all, for example.
Mm.
The good news is that there is a small percentage of people who do recover from this.
Mm. They can say, I can tell you the statistics. You can, and then I'll also tell you the... Blah, blah, blah. Because you can, of course, you can work with data and you can say, of the people who have had this tumor, etc., we see this percentage, blah, blah, blah.
Mm.
And what is particular about the percentage that do get better is, you know, but if you never check, what's particular about the ones who get better?
That's what she does in this book.
Yeah. Good. Cool. Yeah.
And she actually has said that this book was not her dream book to write.
No.
Because she only allowed herself to involve studies that were, in inverted commas, scientifically proven.
Yeah.
She said, but there is so much that science has not caught up with.
Yeah. That's book number two. Yeah.
That after that, she let herself write that book.
Yeah, good.
good. But she wanted to write a book. You know, she came from this doctor, you know, the family. And she wanted to write, she knows that world so well. She wanted to write a book that they cannot refute it.
Mm.
And she did.
Mm.
And it is so interesting.
Mm. I look forward to reading it.
So intention is definitely one of...
Yeah. Intention as in, maybe there's a better word. Intention also looks a little bit like, maybe it's not a nice word, but something like direction or, I don't know. I'm thinking, the word hope. I have... Yeah, hope. The word I have now is hineni, you know? When you're like, yes, I am here. I am here. So you know your position.
From the Leonard Cohen song.
Yes, and from the Bible.
Yeah, I know. He took it from the Bible, but from his album just before he died. He wanted it darker. And that's what it says.
I am here. Yeah. You know? I'm here.
He says, I'm ready, my Lord.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're saying, I know where I am. I am in this place where I am. I have a tumor, you know. I'm here, it's with the tumor, now I'm ready. Like the direction or positionality, direction, intention. That's what I mean by intention.
Then I understand what you mean,
The way, what I'm looking at. Like I'm looking at another life, a healthy life, and another form, you know, like a... The other.
Yeah.
I'm like ready to leave and receive, you know, something like that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And for that, you have to be given hope.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is such a big aspect of it.
And hope means like belief in possibility.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm. Belief in possibility. No,
and support.
Support.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaks a lot about loneliness.
Yeah.
Kills more than smoking. Kills more than obesity.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's so much proof about this. There's so much science.
Yes.
That we're backing that up.
Yeah. Yeah, we often need to use the word science.
We do.
Still today. Yeah. But, you know, in a couple of years, it won't be.
Maybe it might mean something else.
Yes. Maybe we'll have more. It'll be sort of scientism connotations. It will sound like someone who is restricted rather than someone who has falsifiable test results to back up what they're saying.
Or maybe science will become a wider, they will open up. The scientists.
In Swedish you say vetenskapsteori, but that is philosophy of science in English. I love the way you can say philosophy of anything in English. So the philosophy of science might also evolve. These processes whereby you are allowed to call something scientific, you know, that might also...
Yeah.
Yeah.
We might... See, I find it... I'm very fascinated by that side as well. When I was doing the training, the mind recovery training, there was, well, one in particular...
mind class recovery.
System, yeah, that's cool. There was a classmate who actually... She lost it with me once.
Yeah.
Like, all these questions! Like... And can't you just accept it? And she felt that I was questioning Krista too much. And she said that it's as if you have to be the difficult child who's questioning her father. And I had just resigned from a job where I felt that I wasn't allowed to question, that I just had to toe the line and play the game. And so it was like, oh my gosh, no, have I chosen another situation like that for myself where one isn't allowed a challenge, where there isn't room for growth. Because I don't want to challenge for the sake of challenging, but if you challenge something, then you're pushing a boundary and then it can be growth.
Yes.
And Krista, you know, he was quiet, he listened to her, and I was like, oh no. It was quite interesting, my own reaction in it. And he said to her, okay, as long as you realize that these are your own feelings,
yeah.
Said, I'm loving these questions.
Yeah.
I'm feeling that they are making us go further.
Yeah.
That they are pushing us further than I've been in the previous groups with the depth of our understanding of this. So just as long as you know, I'm loving it. Those are your feelings.
Yeah.
Those are your feelings perhaps about you and your father.
Yeah.
And challenging. And I was like, oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's okay. It's okay to be curious. It's okay to want to always push things a little further to understand more.
Yes,
And because I was like, well, why does the tapping work? Why? You're saying that it does this and it does this. And I believe you because I've seen the miracles in my daughter and already in myself. But why? And he was coming up with, well, you know, Lisa Rankin's research is up to 95% of a cell's function is governed by feelings, which is very, very interesting because we're working with feelings the whole time. We're working with feelings, not the intellect.
Yeah.
Actually, you're gaining an intellectual understanding through it.
Yeah.
But it's only the feeling that's important when we're treating. We're not actually, as you say in Swedish, referring to vettigresonemang. How would you even say that in English? We're not trying to, a therapist would try and, you know.
We're not trying to be reasonable.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. You know, if I said, oh, I'm so ugly, you know. Said,
are you really? If you look at the proportions
Exactly. Whereas I would perhaps say to a client, feel how ugly you are. I would try and intensify that feeling. And afterwards we can speak in a more reasonable manner about it. But hopefully by that stage, that feeling, we've basically deactivated it during the treatment, hopefully. But and you could say, you know, they've even been that they can even take photos of molecules before and after tapping, and they change form and all of this. But at the end of the day, when you take this all these questions as far as you can, and why does the tapping work, we don't know.
Yeah,
we don't really know. And I was like, Okay, thank you. I can accept that.
Yes. Yeah. Because, and also for this other woman, critical thinking isn't the same as being critical or being negative. Yes. You know? Critical thinking is just trying to really, really chew what you're eating. And you go like, what am I feeling here? And, you know, what's that? Is there a hint of?
Yes.
You know, you're just asking, this is what you're doing.
Yes.
And if you think that that is hurting someone's feelings or something, then, you know, check on your, the way you use feelings or, you know, like check on,
exactly.
You know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that just come from a situation where I felt my own subjective feeling was there was no space for growth. There was no space anymore for critical thinking apart from the absolute necessary, you know, if something really wasn't working, but not to take things even further. And I didn't want to be in a situation like that again. So that's why it was so important to me that it was, this is great. This is the way we work. This is what this is all about. We want to discovering more.
Yeah. I understand 100%.
So Christa and Thomas, my two teachers, they have a doctor on their team, actually. She's a district lecturer. And her son, when he was a teenager, he broke a bone in his knee and playing hockey or something. And they, you know, it was x-rayed and the orthopedic section at the hospital. Well, it said, you know, it's a very complicated break.
Yeah.
And this was in December, so, you know, we can only operate after Christmas. And until then, he has to have heavy painkillers, strong painkillers. And then we'll operate, hopefully, in January. And then he'll need a lot of physio and rehab. And then, you know, it will be a long time before he's playing sports again. And the kid got really, really down. And, you know, he loved playing sports and he was in a lot of pain. And she was at the stables and someone... These people were talking about this miracle therapist in Skåne. Oh, and he cured my whiplash injury. And yeah, my friend, you know, her phobias are gone and everything. So she started listening and she's like, oh, you know, what have I got to lose?
Yeah.
So she took her son to him. And she sat in a corner and she's like, oh, what is this? Is he a charlatan, you know? what's he doing?
Yeah.
And tapping and he's touching the knee and that feel and then tapping and after 45 minutes Christa says to the kid, okay, can you stand up? And he says yes, and can you bend your knees? And she has seen the x-rays, she's a doctor, and she says she wants to scream out, no, of course he can't bend his knees. And he bends his knees and he says, but it doesn't hurt. And then he says to his mother, Ma, you're a doctor, why can't you do this?
Yeah.
And she was like, yeah, why can't I help people in that way?
Yeah.
I'm a doctor.
Yeah.
I became a doctor to help people.
Yeah.
She did the training. Now she's not trained and she sends patients to him who have been to like 50, 100 doctors. It's an amazing story she tells. This woman who was on, I don't know how many different medications and walked with the skew leg and was desperate. And she said, are you prepared to try something else? And she went to Christa and how she would come for checkups in between. And, you know, was walking straight and her legs straight. And then 1 week she came and her leg was skew again. Not like before, but it'll skew again. And she talked to her. And she was in a very difficult part of her childhood in her treatments. And then she came back a month later and her leg was straight again. And it's off all of these medications, all of these blood pressure, all of these. And it's really created health. You know, the doctors were just treating illness. Sorry, what?
Let's repeat that. Treating illness and creating health.
And what I just love about her was that openness. That, you know, she said, I became a doctor because I wanted to make people happy and well. She said, and after a while, I started feeling, well, the only people I'm making happy and well are the people who are coming with wax in their ears, because I take away the ball of wax and they can hear and then they're happy.
Yeah.
But the rest, I'm not, you know, she says that even learning about nutrition, it's like 2 or 3 days and it was optional.
Yeah.
In this, what is a medical education, 7, 8 years?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
And yeah, I do a few days of nutrition, and it's optional.
Mm. It's so fabulous. I've had eczema in my ears that I got when my big daughter was very small. I cried. It was so, like, it's itches so much. I cried. I didn't know what to do. I went to the doctor 3 or 4 times, and they said, I have a tendency to get eczema. And I could buy this yellow cream thing that, yeah, that stains your sheets and whatever.
Mm.
Changed my diet. Within 3 days, it was gone. 6 years of eczema.
Mm.
You know? Mm. Do you cry or laugh?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Both.
yeah, exactly. Now, I mean, that's something that's quite amazing. My daughter, she's had eczema since she was very, very small.
Mm.
And it's become a lot better.
Mm.
Like, night and day, but it's not quite gone.
Mm.
You know, sometimes it's diet, because she also knows how she eats affects it.
Yeah.
She eats gluten, it's worse.
Yeah.
But in this situation, I said...
Dairy for me.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. But it's her as well. Also, yeah. If she drinks milk, she's pretty screwed. But she said even when she was eating the right way during this month that she was seeing this guy, it was... I said, well, isn't that an amazing thing to know?
Yeah.
How wise your body is?
Mm.
How you can trust your own body?
Yeah.
She said it is. And I was never taught that.
I know. I keep thinking, I just told my boyfriend earlier that we're like the highly sensitive people are like the canary birds that they took into the...
Yeah.
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 You know, when we react first so everybody else can know this is not good.
Yeah.
Get out.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it isn't very good with... dairy products, for instance.
Exactly.
You know, it's now shown that it's, for adults, for children, when you're growing, perhaps. But, yeah.
I still don't think it is.
But it's the way of, oh, never mind, let's leave that for another, someone else's discussion.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's what we are, we're showing, you know, this was not very good, so now we know. Now I know. I know, and I can tell other people.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. But... That no one encouraged you in that profession to listen to what you're, you know.
But you get the cream to put on instead of asking why it's there.
Yeah.
And how to see that it's like, on especially with eczema, it's so obvious that it sort of, it comes from the skin, like from inside the skin. It's, you know, exactly. It's like, I can't believe that. What they do is prescribe a cream.
Yeah.
Mm. It's like the craziest misunderstanding.
I know.
Mm. Isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, I've been thinking of, maybe I should do that after this podcast now. I've been thinking about it for several years. Maybe now it's the time. I'll just go to my Vård Central, because they also have like the special, the different rooms where the different doctors are. So they've got one... door that I was sitting there in the waiting room several years ago now, and I saw this young girl with her dad, like maybe 15 or 12 or I don't know, it's hard to say sometimes, and the door said asthma call, you know, these super dangerous diseases, and I'm like, it should say lungs and breathing.
Yes
that is what you're looking at. And
exactly,
you know.
Yeah.
Why how can you not see that it's like, again, the magic of words? Exactly. Even in the I took one semester of nursing back in the year 2000 before when I thought that philosophy is something you can do on the side as a hobby, and then I decided, okay, never, I'll never do this again. You know, I'll do what my heart tells me to do. I wanted to be a philosopher since I was 14, 15 or something. So I dropped out and did philosophy instead. But during this one semester of nursing studies, if the courses that you are learning are called some like asthma and call and like lung cancer and stuff, how do you think it affects you on your way to the class? I mean, what do you want? Your interest?
The power of words.
The power of words.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. And then you go in there, you're learning about a symptom.
Yes, you learn about a symptom and you sit like this, you know, with this huge cloud over your, like, heaviness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something that I also found so interesting in the Lisa Rankin book was how there are studies linking different diseases to different childhood traumas.
Yes. Yeah.
Whether it's sexual abuse, physical abuse, yeah. or war, or, you know, that it is proven that people with Parkinson's were more likely to have had that trauma. Yeah. People, and medicine is slowly catching up.
Mm.
They know that, for example, stress makes Parkinson's worse.
Mm.
But they're not there yet where they're going to have to. Mm. I just believe they're going to have to survive. Mm. But they are not there yet. And okay, so then why did the person get Parkinson's?
Yeah.
And that this is going to have to be such a paradigm shift, though.
Yeah.
To arrive there.
Yeah.
Because there's so many very strong interests holding the medical profession back. And, you know, one doesn't have to believe in conspiracy theory. It's just a fact.
Yeah, it's just a fact. Yeah. Yeah. There's also this German or Swiss, maybe, doctor who in the 70s or something, his son died, I think, or was shot. And 6 months later, he discovered he had cancer. So he immediately connected the two. He said he got cancer from grief, you know. Mm. And he wrote this highly contested book. If you look at, try to find it on Wikipedia, I forget his name now, but if I found the article on Wikipedia and it was just like a hate article of completely sort of debunking everything he said and how there's no connection, blah, blah, blah. And, but these books and these voices have been around for, you know, a few decades now.
Yeah.
So it's not a brand new revolutionary idea that mind and body are connected in this particular way, you know, that your experiences and your emotions and your emotional life and your psychological history in fact give you are traceable in the body.
Yes,
you know.
Yes,
this is
and we do have a genetic blueprint.
Yeah,
but how it expresses itself.
Yes. Yeah.
Is that's not written in stone.
No, it isn't. And you
and
might
Bruce Lipton, actually, I haven't read his book, but have you read it?
No, but I've but I've seen some YouTube clips.
Right, but that, you know, it's about the expression of our genetic code.
Mm.
Why does it express it? And you know, why does that cancer gene then get activated?
Yeah.
Oh, that's another study that I loved so much from that book, where they had laboratory rats and they divided them into three groups.
Mm.
And the one group was given all three were first injected with cancer cells.
Mm.
But the amount that a healthy immune system should be able to fight off. Our body fights off cancer cells every day.
Mm.
So, and so all three were injected with cancer cells. And, but group one weren't given any electric shocks. Group two were given electric shocks, but were able to find ways to avoid them. Ah, so if I turn right there and then press that latch or whatever, then I'm not going to get the shock. Group three were given random electric shocks, but had no way of avoiding them. And then they do the studies of how many of these rats develop cancer.
Yeah, yeah. You can just guess, you know.
Okay,
yeah.
so the group that didn't get any, they fought off the cells very well. But the group that fought them off even better, were the group that got the shocks but were able to control.
Yes.
Because also having control over one's own life.
Yeah.
Have being able to decide in one's own
being
life.
Being an agent in your own life and not just the victim of stuff happening.
Yes.
Yeah.
So the ones who didn't get the shocks, they actually didn't even
survive
as well as the ones who did.
Yeah.
The ones who, they died nearly, the whole lot of them were the ones who got the shocks but couldn't do anything to control it.
Yeah. This is the same types of experience, not with cancer cells, but with dogs and also something it's are in the positive psychology research by Martin Seligman. It's super interesting, the connection between being like and knowing that you are able to change things in your life and flourishing and happiness.
Mm.
This kind of authentic happiness. I think one of his books is called Authentic Happiness.
Yeah,
super interesting. But I had another thread that I wanted to say. There's a philosopher called Zygmunt Bauman, and I heard him say once in a film a good life is not a life without problems. Mm. No, 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 no. It's a life where we have problems that we overcome.
Yeah, yeah.
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 That's it. And that is growth. If there's nothing ever happening, how can you grow? Like, you need the sort of...
What's my favorite Leonard Cohen line of them all?
Yeah.
It's, there's a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in.
Yeah. That's how the light gets in.
And that's how I felt last year, which was a very dramatic year in my life in many ways. But one of them was that I resigned from my job, which is something you don't do as a musician.
Mm.
You know, you work hard to get that job.
Yeah.
That's kind of the holy grail. And I resigned from one. I'll probably never get another one.
Mm.
And it was a very painful process, which I don't think is relevant to this discussion. I mean, it's not that I'm not happy to talk about it, but I just don't think it's relevant. But that I felt that, it was around the same time that I found this technique.
Mm.
So that I first received treatments and then trained myself to become a therapist. Mm. And I really feel that I got cracked open.
Yeah.
Last year.
Yeah.
I finally got cracked open properly.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there were lots of dents.
Yeah, and yeah, yeah, yeah.
Bruises, yeah. But that I finally allowed myself to be cracked open.
Mm.
And it was only and you know, people say to me, "You never met me before."
Mm.
But people who hardly know me say that the look in your eyes is different.
Mm.
It is just you're different.
Mm. I'm like crying. Yeah.
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 But and I've cried more.
Yeah.
This last year than I've probably cried in my whole life. Mm. And I've laughed more.
Yeah.
My son said to me, "You're a much nicer mother now. Yeah. You're not so angry anymore. You laugh so much more."
Yeah.
But that appeases my guilt because I'm away a lot now.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm freelancing. But yeah, I laugh more. I can like belly laugh so that, you know, so that I almost pee myself. But I also cry so much more.
Yeah.
And that is... That's it.
Mm. Yeah, thank God it happened.
Yeah,
thank God you cracked open.
Thank God I cracked open, yeah. Yeah.
Mm. Like when the little musk rose gets out of the asphalt.
Yeah.
You know?
Or in Japan, isn't it that they mend the bowls sort of with gold? Because that's the crack is the most beautiful part.
Yeah.
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 But I think that having said that, one also can't romanticize it, because I think if you get cracked open and there isn't, and you're not given the tools to deal with it, then...
You might die.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's where the loneliness as a killer can come in.
Yeah.
I was very, very fortunate that there was just so much synchronicity.
Mm.
In the way things happened at that time in my life.
Yes. Mm. One part of which was your openness.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm. And receptibility.
Absolutely.
For like
things
happening. So you weren't completely closed off, because if you are completely closed off, you don't even notice synchronicity.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Exactly. The way I found actually this method was, it's true. I was so open because I'd said a prayer.
Yeah.
Just show me what I must do.
Yeah.
And then the next day,
yes,
this presented itself to me.
Mm.
So maybe if it had happened a month before, I wouldn't have even noticed.
Mm.
I was in survival mode then.
Mm.
So, yeah. Mm. Yeah, yeah. Synchronicity is all around us.
Mm.
But we can run straight past it looking at our phones.
Yeah.
Some of the time.
Yeah. Looking at our phones or feeling the same feelings we used to feel, and you know, the comfort in the devil that you know.
Mm.
But the thing is...
But sorry to interrupt you.
Yeah.
I want you to finish that, but that is so true, because that the devil that you know, it was so secure for me.
Mm. It is.
And I felt betrayed.
Mm.
I was, yeah, exactly. Mm. And I felt so badly betrayed, and I'm so grateful now for that betrayal.
Mm.
I'm so grateful for the fact that I feel I was stabbed in the back, because it would have felt it just was a little too comfortable to leave.
Mm.
And that is the metaphor of the Jews leaving Egypt.
Mm.
That kept coming to me, it like from everyone.
Mm.
Well, why couldn't they wait for the bread to rise? Come on. been there for thousands of years.
Mm.
Half an hour more?
Yeah.
Wait for the bread?
Yeah.
No, because it was like, right now is the moment. Mm. And if we stay, then maybe we weren't there.
Yeah.
Not that there won't be another opportunity.
Mm. Yeah.
But when you know right now is my moment, right now I have the courage, right now is the time for change.
Yes.
And you feel the courage in that moment, then you might not feel the courage tomorrow.
Mm.
That's how it felt for me.
Mm. When I did my master's in philosophy in Amsterdam, I took a course called Ennui, Melancholy, Ennui, Despair and Fate. It was very interesting. I also took a course called The Good Life. So this was for me like the bad life. Sort of, I want to do, or as usual, take like both. So it's all right. The broadest possible spectrum of things. So for this course, I figured that, I read somewhere that melancholy, the definition of melancholy is standing by the gates to heaven and not going in.
Mm.
And that is precisely the thing, you know. Now is the time. Inertia, like no movement, nothing emerging. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's melancholy.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's like the bad life.
So how to go in to get through those gates? This was part one of my conversation with Heather. Part two and all other episodes are available on philoprax.com. That's philoprax.com. Thank you for listening.